This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Mike. How are you, buddy? Perfect?
Not quite. I think I have to go back and double check, but I think I have 13 of the Sweet 16, but I'm not 100%.
That's good.
That's pretty good.
That's great.
That's really good.
And you know, it's we've talked about it this morning. There are only 4 conferences represented and only one team, Duke from the ACC. And there used to be, I guess, since 1975, there were at least 7 conferences. But all the talent seems to be in the super conferences, and there are none of the kind of underdog, mid-major, buzzer-beater stories that we've come to expect in a tournament.
Well, that's true, but one of the things that has to be acknowledged is that not all those teams that are in the conferences now were always in those conferences. I mean, Houston was not in the Big 12 as recently as 3 years ago. And now they're a number one seed in this tournament. They have been in multiple different conferences. I mean, I was in less than 30 years ago. I was around Memphis when they formed Conference USA out of the Great Midwest and the remnants of the Metro. And,
right.
And Houston was in that league, and they were like, sort of like, oh yeah, you can come too. It wasn't like, oh good, we got Houston. It was like, oh well, okay, we might as well take them. They're in a big city. I mean. And now look at where they are. So, like, the underdog story is redefined, but no one wants to acknowledge that because it doesn't fit the narrative.
It's redefined, yes. I miss the mid-majors, I'll acknowledge, because you do long for or lament the absence of the Butlers or Valparaisos, Mike. But I do think there are reasons that you point out quite well. And you also, as you have said this on the X feed, maybe this is also the result of the committee getting better at seeding the brackets, and I guess that's a possibility. Even though I'll admit, I felt like the first weekend was somewhat disappointing because we don't have that Cinderella story to latch on to, but maybe it's just a product of better seeding.
Well, one of the things, too, David, is that we did have a couple of pretty cool upsets, Drake beating Missouri, and we had McNeese take down Clemson, so we did have some of those. We certainly had some close calls along the way. I mean, Maryland needed to make certainly not an impossible shot, but a kind of ridiculous shot in order to be able to take out Colorado State. So we had moments like that. And I will say that I just don't know how anybody who could sit down, and I was fortunate to have this because we circled this as a huge game to watch, the Arkansas-St. John's game. I mean, it wasn't beautiful basketball, but it was the most ferociously competitive athletic event I can remember seeing. Those players were after it so hard because they were playing for their coach. They were playing for the Sweet 16. Each side really wanted that. And it was they were contesting every inch of the court. The ball went on the floor, and 17 guys dove after him. And there were guys from the bench diving after it practically. It was amazing. And I can't look at that and say I'm disappointed. I can't look at this weekend and see all these great matchups that we're going to have and say, boy, I wish we had a team in there that we all know isn't going to win another game. I mean, I don't know that there's that many that are in this group that can't make the Final Four.
I know what you're saying, but Mike, don't you miss a little bit of the storylines that are brought into this week by some of those Cinderella stories that are missing or teams that are missing from this batch? No?
I'll be honest, Dave. I'm not a storyline guy.
Okay.
I'm a ball guy.
Fair enough.
I mean, I like sports. I'm not that wild. Some of the stories that are ancillary to the tournament distract me. I want to see great games. And you know, the more Derrick Queen-type moments we have, the better. And there are – and let's be honest, Dave, there are storylines. I mean, Derrick's great answer to my friend Andy Katz when asked, you know, how he made that shot, and he just said, I'm from Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great stuff. And even to a negative extent, the way Dan Hurley handled the disappointment of the Florida game, there's still that to discuss. So there's other things aside from just the games that still catch our attention.
I agree with you. We were talking this morning because we're talking a lot even during the break because we've both been attempted to be bullied by SIDs, by a lot of general managers, coaches, whatever, in our careers. And I hate this story. I hate this idea that this – have you dealt with Mullen, the SID, the communications guy, who threatened to ruin a guy's life because he had a video of Danny Hurley – swearing and cursing about the officiating?
Yeah, I have never had a problem at all. I was trying to do the math of where the reporter was to try to figure out why he wouldn't be allowed to be videotaped, because I was in an area that I think might have been identical and certainly was similar. The arena at Raleigh was a little bit geographically confusing for me, I'll admit. But at one point, I remember it was either before or after the Duke game. I think it was before. I was trying to get to a locker room or get to the line to get to the locker room. And there were at least 8 to 10 television cameras that I think were focused on Duke as they prepared to go out onto the floor to take their warm-ups prior to the Baylor game. And they were all filming because I had to duck them so that I wouldn't get in their shots. So I don't know why anybody wouldn't have been permitted to do the video that the reporter did there. And so I don't understand what the concern was. I think they just didn't like the product. And I don't know how a UConn SID would ruin a Charlotte reporter's life anyway. I'm not sure. I mean, if the person was on the beat, okay, I could see that, but I don't think that person's going to have many occasions to cover UConn.
That's why it just smacks of entitlement and somebody that is over his skis in terms of what his power and reach really is. Mike, back to basketball. You like the games. You like what happens on the court. Let's focus on that. You saw Duke play. I think they played as well as any team in the tournament so far. Florida, of course, kept pulling out that game against UConn. They look like they're going to be in the Final Four. What stood out to you overall, and how good did Duke look up close and personal?
Yeah, this was my second chance to get a chance, the second and third, I guess, if you count the 1-16 game. I don't really. I'll confess, I think I was writing a piece at the time and only looked up a little bit because there wasn't much to see. But this was my second chance to see Duke in a real game, and they're very impressive. They have three automatic lock top 10 picks. Every time I see Kaman Malawach, he looks better, looks more comfortable, looks more comprehensive as a player. Not just a tall guy who can block shots, but a guy who really understands how to get teammates open. how to defend on the perimeter when he's playing in a pick and roll or that sort of thing. Really terrific. Con Knipple, at one point he made this ridiculous layup, and Brendan Marks from The Athletic has said, you know, the times there a lot of times in these games when he's the third or fourth option for this team, how ridiculous is that? Because he's so gifted. And then, of course, anytime you get a chance to see Cooper Flagg, it's a treat. He is just a phenomenal talent and approaches the game beautifully. It's a terrific team and one that I picked to win it all. And it'll take a great effort from someone to surpass them in the next four games. I thought Florida honestly was not very good in their UConn game. The fact that UConn's two top perimeter shooters, Liam McNeely and Alex Caravan, shot something like 3 of 17 from deep, and they still were in the game right to the end, that did not say good things about Florida. It said great things about UConn that they were able to compete like that. But Florida needed Walter Clayton to be better than he was for the first 32 minutes. He was phenomenal for the last eight. I think he had 10 points in the last eight points in the last 8 minutes, and they were decisive. But they're going to have to be better, and they're going to have to be way better. Of course, so is Maryland, because they weren't very good on Sunday either.
Right.
But those two teams, that's the Sweet 16 matchup will be most consequential. The one that will be most fun will be Alabama versus BYU. But I think both Florida and Maryland have a chance to win this. And so Maryland doesn't have enough guys, but they have enough talent.
Right.
And having talent is better than having depth. So I think they have a chance, but they have the most difficult Sweet 16 matchup short of being matched with Duke. So it'll be hard.
I think Florida looks like a team. I thought they played kind of the way Connecticut won two titles. I think Florida is better than Maryland. I think they're better than Texas Tech or Arkansas. I think they're
right.
They're then going to be really challenged. But I don't find these two games as challenging for them because of the way they can play.
They're going to have to defend. It's helpful to them that they have four bodies to do it.
Yes.
They've got four really good big guys. But they're going to have to defend Queen and Reese.
Yes.
And, of course, they'll only have to defend Queen and Reese if their teammates remember that Queen and Reese are on their team. Because they forgot all about it against Colorado State until the last play.
That's great. Well, and I also think that the fact that they are, you know, they're the Crab Five, but they don't have a six.
They really don't have a lot of depth.
Beyond that, it's not like – so, I would go after them a little bit and try to get them in foul trouble and try to see if you could, take advantage of the depth.
Oh, absolutely. The only time in this tournament when depth is really an issue is foul trouble or injury.
Yes. Yes.
It's helpful to have another. It's helpful to have another answer if somebody's just not playing at all. If you had another R.J. Lewis sitting on the bench at St. John's, maybe they could have done better. But R.J. goes 3 of 17, and you've got no answers beyond that. So Maryland, it could be problematic if either or if any of their players really, but especially the two inside guys, got into foul trouble, they're going to have problems. But Florida doesn't. Although they can score on the move, and that could be problematic, they don't really post much. So just getting the ball inside, probably not going to be something that they do. They could try to get those guys in foul trouble just by attacking the rim off the bounce and that sort of thing. And it could be problematic for Maryland. But with all the rest that they get in these games, long TV timeouts, 20-minute halftime,
yeah,
it certainly is. If you can survive the absence of depth, this is the tournament to do it.
Quickly, Mike, before we let you go, a lot of conversation about the transfer portal being open this week. Michigan's dealing with Scottie Pippen's son being a guy who entered the portal while they prepare for a Sweet 16 game. Is this likely to change? Is it on the NCAA's radar? What can they do?
It's hard for them to change it because this is really not about sports so much. I mean, I realize that the transfer portal is, but this is largely about the academic calendar, and that's why it pops up when it does for football. It's a little bit less – they have a little bit more leeway in basketball season than they do in football season. Starting in March, they could wait until the end of the regionals or the Final Four because you'd only have four teams out of 364 if you waited till after the regionals to open it. But this is really an accommodation for students, not so, as much as basketball players, because they have to find new academic homes in a period of time when those decisions are usually already made by most universities for the typical student, for the non-athlete. So I think that has a lot to do with why this opens when it does. And I'm a little bit more forgiving than some, because I understand, I'm allowing myself to understand that this isn't just about sports. It's also about students finding new places to go study.
Really interesting. All right, Mike. Thank you, buddy. Great stuff as always. Remind me, your Final Four is?
My Final Four, and they're all still standing.
Yep.
Florida.
Yep.
Michigan State.
Oh, that's good.
Duke and Tennessee.
Great
wow,
stuff.
That's great.
Thanks for your perspective,
stuff.
Mike.
Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, the Big Ten Network. Really been around a long time, knows it.
Oh, he does.